Hello, everyone, and welcome to the In Defense of Plants podcast, the official podcast of indefenseofplants.com. What's up? This is your host, Matt. How's everyone doing this week? I just want to start off by saying that this is not a political podcast. It's never intended to be, and it never will become one. That's not what this episode is going to be about. But I know that no matter where you stand on the political spectrum, people are angry. People want to do something. People want to see change in this world. So today's episode is devoted to change in your own community as it relates to environmental change. There's no denying that it's going to get pretty weird here in the next few years, and we'll probably be reeling from the ramifications of our decisions for another decade. So today's episode is dedicated to kind of getting you inspired into channeling some of your anger or your frustrations with the world into doing something productive for the environment, okay? So today's guest is my good friend, Bill Michalek. Bill Michalek is an educator, both at the environmental and at the, real education scale. He's a second grade teacher. He's an adjunct professor at the University of Buffalo. And he spent at least a decade of his early career in environmental ed. So Bill's in a unique position in that he is an educator at all levels and has seen and done a lot with the community. He's also part of the Field Guides podcast. So him and his co-host Steve, also my good friend and someone you've heard on this podcast before, go out every month into the woods, research a topic, and relate that topic to you in a fun and interesting way. It's a really great podcast, and I really highly recommend you subscribe and listen to it. But Bill's on today to talk to us about kind of channeling our aggressions, channeling a lot of our negative energies into doing something positive. And it was a really good conversation. Bill's amazingly insightful. He's open-minded. And it's I think we need that. You know, regardless, again, of how you feel or where you fall in this political spectrum, we all need to get together and start working together a lot more than we have in the past. So I hope today's episode inspires you to do just that. This isn't really going to be a preachy episode. I really don't want you to think that this is going to be a big finger-pointing thing. It's more about how to channel your energies into something productive and what you can do for your community. Because really, I think I subscribe to the Think Globally, Act Locally. I know that there's an environmental organization in your backyard that needs your help, whether that's manpower, whether that's advocacy, whether that's money. There's no one way to help, but you should really start consider doing it. Apathy isn't going to cut it anymore. So before I get to that, just remember that if you want to support this podcast, you can head on over to patreon.com/indefenseofplants and check out what we got going on over there. This episode was produced in part by Alan, Gregory, Desiree, Troy, Margie, Laura, Brian, and Mark. So thank you to everyone who supported us on Patreon thus far, and head on over there to see if you want to be part of this process. Also, if you would like to support orchid conservation and research in North America, head on over to indefenseofplants.com/shop and pick up a sticker. 50% of that purchase is donated directly to orchid research and conservation efforts here in North America. So it's for a good cause, and orchids are kind of like umbrella species because generally what's good for them is good for the environment as a whole. All right, everyone, I don't want to waste any more time on this rambling, so let's head on over to my conversation with Bill. I hope you enjoy. Bill, thanks. Thanks for coming on the podcast, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm awesome.
So this people,
I was going to say, this is new for me. Yeah. I've never been interviewed.
Really?
Really?
Damn. I feel like you've got enough connections. You should have been at this point. You've got things to say, man.
I do.
Thanks for having me. Of course. And I think this is a prime time to bring you on with your expertise. A lot of people are not feeling so hot right now. It's been a rough week. And really, I don't want to make this a political discussion, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that want to do something. And doing something is good. Sitting on your couch and panicking is not good.
Firing off. Angry posts on Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, those are fine. That's everyone's freedom of expression. But we want to channel the anger, right? And you want to do something to give back. But for those of you that don't know you as well as I know you, let's give a little bit of background. Who are you and what do you do?
Sure. So I'm Bill Michalek, and I started out as an environmental educator. So out of college, I started working with people of all ages, but mostly kids at a nature center. And I did that for about 7-8 years, all told about 10 years in environmental ed. I did a couple years part-time prior to that. And it was great. It was awesome. I loved working with kids and with adults. But the problem that I started to realize was that I never got to work with any group or person for an extended period of time. Most interactions I had with a group were for an hour or 2 hours, and then I had to say goodbye. If I was really fortunate, we'd be spending a weekend with a group, sometimes even a week with a group.
Right, because you did some like ecotourism kind of ordeals.
We would take groups up to the Adirondack Mountains in New York or down to the Everglades. But those were pretty rare, you know, once a year at best. The weekends, sometimes more, but even then, you'd start to see these people make some deeper connections and have some deeper appreciation, and then they were gone.
Right.
Sometimes they would attend other programs, but I just started to feel frustrated that I felt I wanted to develop long-term relationships with clientele and have that relationship allow them to build a deeper relationship with the natural world. So I decided to go into classroom teaching. So I went back to school, got my master's in education, and went into the classroom. So I teach second grade. And so I've been doing that for 10 years.
Good man.
It's never dull. And then about 5-6 years ago, I had the opportunity to become an adjunct lecturer at the University of Buffalo.
So what do you teach there?
So I teach Intro to Environmental Studies during one semester. And then I teach a class called Wilderness, which I'm actually currently teaching this semester, that focuses on the politics, the philosophy, the history, the biology of the wilderness concept. And I'd say teaching at the university level has broadened my understanding and appreciation of what it means to be an activist. And also feeding into that, when I was in college, I became a vegetarian. Because of, you know, mostly for environmental reasons. And then probably about 10 years ago now, I took the crazy step of isolating myself further from society and became a vegan. and, you know, doing that, you're definitely exposed to a lot of people in the activist world. Some of them are somewhat rough around the edges in how they address people, to put it nicely.
Yeah, that's really nice of you to say that way.
So I became appreciative of the spectrum of activists that are out there. And I've just thought a lot about it. And I would say at the college level, and I'm sure you see this too, is that you have a lot of college students that are passionate, mm-hmm. and they just don't know what to do with that passion.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, even within the field, not even just activism, but people that love plants or love birds, a lot of them have no idea what's out there and available because no one really sat them down and said, oh, and this is how you succeed as this person, or these are the avenues you can take. So yeah, I don't see a lot of apathy, at least not at the level that I'm at right now with students. I see a lot of, I really want to do something, but you know, no one's telling me how to do it, or you know, you're gonna get lost on the internet sometimes, and you know, not to discourage anyone's attempts and connections with nature, but there's so many different avenues, and it's like, well, which one's the right one, you know?
Right. And you mentioned the word apathy. I would say I don't see a lot of apathy in my college students, but I see a lot of them have the idea that they're not going to change anybody's mind. People's minds are made up, and they feel that no matter what they say, people aren't going to change their mind, because I think for many people in college, their idea of environmental discussion or political debate is what they see played out on Facebook or in comment sections.
Totally.
And I would say most people in those areas aren't out to have their minds changed.
No, they have an agenda.
Right.
Yeah. And when I mean, as active as I am in the blogosphere and having a podcast out, and I'm sure you can empathize with this now that you guys have a podcast out, you know, the people that are leaving comments usually, if it's in a negative connotation, that's where I think it's, why do you bother interacting with them? I don't get all negative. I have a lot of wonderful interactions, but yeah, I don't think comment sections on the internet are necessarily like the litmus test for what debate feels like in this society.
Right. Or what impact your ideas can have on other people.
Certainly. There's always those moments, because I fall into that trap sometimes where, you know, I'll interact with someone and like, look, we are coming from so different backgrounds. We're not even on the same playing field in terms of our mindsets. What am I possibly going to say to this person? But I can't tell you how many times that I've just had a casual conversation with someone without an agenda. It segues one way and you get a little nervous, but at the end of it, you're like, oh, that's a good point. And both of you end up saying these things to each other and you're going, wow, for someone that I thought I'd have nothing in common with, suddenly we're going, oh yeah, that's actually interesting. I'm glad you put it that way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is, in and of itself is really important, is just discourse, right? Instead of this emotional, reactionary, knee-jerk kind of stuff that we just want to ad hominem, call someone a name and move on. Discourse, right. I think, is a great place to start, right?
And I think that's easier to have almost in any other forum outside of comments pages, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking recently, ironically, in Facebook comment section about what to do with anger people might feel right now.
Yeah.
What do you do with that? And I lost my train of thought there. But you mentioned that a lot of people are not swayed by facts.
Yeah. Do you feel that's...
I do. I think that's been proven.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a research-based scenario, that's been proven that facts don't always sway people. And they're not even the most effective way to sway people.
Right.
And stories and connecting with people, and like you said, real open discourse is a good way to start. I don't know if you've ever heard of Sally Kohn.
The name rings a bell, but no, I'm not familiar.
She's actually used to be a liberal commentator on Fox News. But yeah, she was basically a liberal talking head on Fox News, but she has a TED talk out there about emotional correctness. And basically when you're talking with someone who's on kind of the other end of your ideas, and they're maybe on the opposite end of the spectrum, is trying to put yourself in their shoes, and why do they feel the way they do? And what are they afraid of?
Mm.
And what are their fears? And then try and couch your approach with keeping that in mind. It's just being aware of how the other person feels and what they're thinking. Because I tell my college students, especially my intro to environmental studies class, where we delve into a lot of environmental issues. And a lot of them say, you know, I want to tell people about this, but I just don't think I'm going to change anybody's mind. I try to tell them, you're probably not going to change people's minds with every conversation you have. Don't set out to change their mind. Just set out to listen to them, to connect to them, present your case in an interesting, respectful way, and hopefully you're going to nudge them on a trajectory that's going to put them maybe down the line somewhere in a more environmental mindset or a more well-informed mindset.
Right.
Because I think people just set out, I need to change this person's mind right now.
Yeah.
And that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. I always try and put myself in the perspective, this person feels as strongly as I do about a subject, whether it be something we agree on or don't agree on. What are the odds that they're going to be able to change my mind? You know what I mean? Like, it's coming into this knowing that both of you have a stance on something. Some are more passionate about it than others, but taking that perspective that yours isn't the only perspective out there, you know? And it's like,
right.
I don't know if anyone's going to change my mind about something I really care about, but I also want to give them at least the wherewithal to listen.
Right. And I think part of that is being open, which I should have mentioned, being open to having parts of your philosophy or your mind changed as well.
Mm.
Because there are many times where we think we know a subject backwards and forwards, and we don't. I mean, today I had my UB class out, and we were hiking through an area, and we did a quick little lesson on predators and deer. And we were walking through a section of forest where you can obviously see there's virtually no understory. And we talked about hunting. We talked about deer. And there were students in the class who I could tell felt uncomfortable talking about hunting as an ecological tool. But trying to sway, you know, because they're in an environmental state of mind, but they're also coming from a place where, for whatever reason, they think hunting equals bad, and that all hunting is bad. So I'm trying to give them the background knowledge of seeing, look, the habitat that we're walking through, this system, we've removed its natural predators. The herbivores are overabundant. The mesopredators have been released, and they're wreaking havoc along with the herbivores. So what is the only logical option that we can do? And, you know, you can talk about contraception. You can talk about, you know, contraception of deer. But the cheapest and the most efficient way for the organization that owns that property is to bring hunters in. That's the realistic way. And I think one thing we should also talk about is, you know, if you're going to take your energy and you're going to channel it, you know, besides discourse and talking to people and being open to having your mind changed, you also need to look at efficiency. What's the most efficient use of your time?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I think a lot of my friends that I've seen through the years and known through activism and have been involved in this stuff is the amount of, you know, you start out and it's a lot of pendulum swings. Like, I feel really strongly this way, and then you learn something and you're like, well, back this way. And it's kind of this black and white mentality. But what they always kind of consistently talk about is this wall that they eventually hit with what they call like activism burnout. And I think a lot of them mirror the sentiment that, it's just really hard to keep an unsustainable amount of energy pouring into something that isn't going to win anyway. And then they kind of regroup and they say, like, wait, okay, we have X amount of hours, X amount of money and manpower. How can we do this more efficiently? And that's when they start getting a little bit more reinvigorated and kind of take a new angle at this whole system that they're fighting within. So
we were talking before too, about drum circles.
Yeah. We brought that up. I brought that up.
You did bring that up. Do you want to talk about that or not really?
No. And I think it's something that, you know, I'm a grump, I'm a curmudgeon. Sarah, my girlfriend, will tell you that, I can be a little misanthropic at times. And what ends up happening is I got really involved in activism in college, and I was what you would consider a hippie, you know, like by all strands. I had the tie-dye, I had the hemp necklaces and such. And then, you know, I went to go work as an environmental permitter for that quarry system, and I met a lot of very interesting people working in a quarry, very colorful individuals. But none of them were mean. None of them were outright disrespectful. A lot of them were hunters, fishermen, they were outdoorsy people just in a very different way than I was. And had I come in there wearing a hemp necklace, we probably wouldn't have gotten along right out of the gates. But the fact that I kind of met in the middle and realized that, like, okay, tone whatever personality I have with my friend group isn't going to really work here. So how do I approach these people that think pretty differently than I do and start talking to them, because it was my job at the end of the day to make sure that they were living up to some form of standards set by regulations. And that can cause a lot of anger. But my point with the drum circles and all of this rambling is the fact that, you know, I saw what happened with the 99% and the Wall Street movement, and
it just seemed to go nowhere.
Yeah, it just kind of seemed to go nowhere. And I just don't think that it just sucks to have a really great movement with a really great idea behind it turn into just a bunch of people sitting around in a drum circle when the people that are in that drum circle already do think the same way. They're built this community around being these people, and that's amazing. But I fear that this middle of the bell curve, the people that aren't necessarily on either side or don't think about it very often, will see these kinds of actions and go like, ugh, they're not doing anything. Like, I just want to see it go beyond a drum circle, because I don't think that's affecting change personally, but you made a really good point that it's more important to come together and build a community sometimes first, because that's where common ground starts to happen. Right. So what do you, I mean, let's elaborate on that.
Sure. I think talking you and I personally, I think one of the obstacles that you and I have to overcome, and maybe some of your listeners, is we don't like to be in groups, do we?
No. No, I'm a loner.
So I think that's why you've gone into research. That's why you have a podcast, right?
Yeah.
Because you're the boss, right?
Yeah, it's exactly it.
I mean, and that's why I think I became a teacher, is because I can broach these topics with people. And I, for lack of a better term, I have somewhat control of the conversation, right? For better or for worse. Just for me, I can introduce these topics into an arena where I'm the teacher. And, you know, it's kind of cheating in a way for me. I'm being honest here. Mm-hmm. Because I can broach these subjects, and students will call me out on it, and I like it when they do. Because too often, students just say, well, he's the teacher, I don't want to call him out.
Yeah, I've had that a lot and right? been wrong. And then I've been like, yeah. Oh, crap, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and I'll tell them, you know, guys, how do you feel about this? Do you agree with what I'm saying? Do you not agree with what I'm saying? Speak up and let me know. So for me, it's kind of a safer environment. But, you know, I think what I want to do at this point in our conversation is kind of focus things a little more, because you asked me on Facebook, you know, what do people do with the anger?
Right.
So I got back to you and I said, you got to educate and debate. I think that's a big one. You and I are both in the teaching realm.
Right.
Because I think education is hugely important. And do you agree that, you know, if we're talking about what people are going to do with this anger, are we we're talking about in the environmental realm?
Yeah, yeah. I'm strictly focusing on the environmental realm here. There's plenty of great social podcasts out there. There's great political podcasts out there. Right. I am, you know, I'm an environmentalist at the end of the day. Both of us are. And this is a plant podcast.
I love you to say that.
Yes. So this is, I'm talking about what can people do if they're angry on either side of the spectrum. What can people do to ensure that in the next decade, we'll even just say decade, yeah. That, you know, we need to start fighting a little bit harder for the environment, because I think up until this point, a lot of what has happening isn't working very well. Obviously, right. There's a lot of countless amounts of environmental issues to tackle. So, yeah, let's focus the conversation on how to channel all of this anger and frustration that the country is feeling at this time and do something good for the environment.
So I talked about people need to educate and debate. So if you can get into some kind of educational arena where you're sharing the knowledge that you have, now you and I have experience, so we have knowledge to share. But when I say educate, I'm also saying educate yourself about the environment, about the issues, because a lot of people have limited knowledge of the environment and what's actually happening outside their door. Go on nature hikes, familiarize yourselves with your local flora and fauna, and what the threats are to your local flora and fauna.
Right.
We already talked a little bit about, you know, debating people. Don't go out with the mindset that you're going to change everybody's mind, you know, in one conversation. Have hope that you're one stepping stone on a path to a more enlightened destination.
Right.
Right. So advocate's another big one. So educate, debate, and advocate. I mentioned joining national groups, local groups, international groups. You can look online for, you know, which organizations use their funds and their programs most efficiently.
Right.
So I know after election night, I looked at who I donated to and I upped my donations. I changed my budget, so I was donating more to some places because there are certain organizations that I wanted to help. I like what they do. I feel what they do is effective. And I wanted to take part in that. Especially more now,
yeah.
With what we're going to see coming from the future administration, right?
Right.
And, you know, as far as advocacy goes, you know, do what fits your personality. I think I mentioned to you, if you're willing to do civil disobedience, you know, go for it. There are groups out there that are willing to do that. I'll say, you know, what Edward Abbey used to say, I would do it if I had more courage. Or if I had a note, if I had a note for my mommy and daddy to say. So that's another thing. I think people should be reading people like Ed Abbey.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So Desert Solitaire, The Monkey Ranch Gang, books like that are very inspiring, although they sometimes inspire people to go outside the law, right?
Well, yeah, and I think that's important, too, is a lot of people sit down and see activism as this chaining yourself to a gate or a tree and getting arrested and such, and it doesn't have to be that way, and I'm definitely not that person. I'm a coward when it comes to that kind of stuff. So advocacy and activism don't have to always be civil disobedience. I'm in support of it. You know, don't go hurting your fellow human beings, please. But yeah, if it's for you, but there's other channels for that as well.
And I touched on this a little bit in our past conversation, but that any social movement, I think, needs a spectrum of activism. You need the activists that are approachable and peaceful, but then you also need all the other activists in between, all the way down to the more radical end, because some people will respond to kindness and civil discourse, and some people need a slap in the face. So I know some people frown upon the activities of certain radical groups, and I do as well, but all of those pieces, at least as far as history shows us, plays a part. I mean, if you look at the civil rights movement, you had a full spectrum of activists out there. You had the Martin Luther Kings, but you also had the Black Panthers. And there have been some historians who have argued that we needed all of those elements, all the ones in between as well, to move our society.
Yeah.
So, and I think
if I actually make a point on that, you know, what I had brought this up in a previous conversation that we had about the Leonardo DiCaprio debate, and I see a lot of infighting on that one because it's like, well, you're a big famous movie star and you have yachts and like, who are you to say this? And I almost feel like we need, like, yeah, it's kind of hypocritical to do that, but I also feel like we need more of those hypocrites. So this other side of the spectrum, right? Because think about the people that see Leonardo DiCaprio and pay attention to like E! Entertainment and that kind of stuff. They're not necessarily talking to the person that's chaining themselves to a redwood.
Right.
So suddenly you have this world famous actor has an incredible resume under his belt that says, hey, maybe you should start caring about the environment. They go like, oh, I like Leo. So what's he got to say? So even if it's just getting someone to go like, huh, I should Google that. I think he's doing a lot in just that way. Not to say that he's also doing a lot more on top of that. But I don't think we need to say that it's one or the other. So I like what you said about the spectrum there.
And I think that on a certain level, we're all hypocrites.
Oh, I am.
Right? I mean, when it comes to doing everything we could be doing for the environment, you can throw a rock in the air and you're going to hit someone who's not doing everything they're doing for the environment. Right?
Yeah.
So I think the hypocrite argument is a tough, it's a tough sell for me. Because you're right. He could be a movie star just dating models and living it up. But at least he's trying to do something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I mean, just the fact that we're on this computer using electricity, probably, you know, like it's like if we were all to go 100% all in, we'd all be living out in the woods foraging and not being able to connect to a wider community base. Again, not to diminish that. If that's what you want to do, get out there and do it. But
But yeah. I mean, you could also argue how many people are you going to influence doing that?
Exactly. Exactly. Right? Yeah.
And I think if someone's looking for some good resources, some good books to read to get them started. I mentioned one to you called Change of Heart by Nick Cooney.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's mostly related to animal activism. He's an animal rights activist, but he addresses it to any kind of activist.
Mm-hmm.
And he definitely talks about the psychology of debating people and bringing them to your side. He has a great anecdote that I think you'll enjoy, where he was talking to a group of college students and he was getting them all fired up. And he said, you know, are you willing to do anything for the environment? And all the college kids shout, yeah. He said, are you willing to go to jail for the environment? And he said, yeah. And he said, are you willing to wear a tie and cut your hair for the environment? Crickets. So
I like that.
And, you know, he was kind of overstating his case to make it funny, but his point was that if you're truly passionate about your cause, you also need to consider making yourself approachable to the other side.
Exactly.
Right? Because sometimes you can fall into the trap of preaching to the choir. And when I was at the Nature Center leading nature hikes, you know, I had a lot of friends and colleagues who said, when we talk comes to environmental issues, they didn't want to debate people. They didn't want to make people uncomfortable. So they said, hey, I'm educating people about the environment. And if I do enough of that, then I think they're going to come to the right place about making environmental decisions. And I don't know, after doing it for 10 years, I just didn't feel that just teaching people about the environment was enough for me. Mm-hmm. I felt like I could be having a bigger impact. So that's why I went into the classroom. So then I can take those young minds and, you know, really show them what's out there. And not just with, you know, the little kids teaching second grade, but also with the university students as well.
Yeah, I mean, you get a wide breadth. I mean, my student base right now, I mean, there is a full spectrum of viewpoints in there, and not just politically, but religiously. It comes through eventually. The more you get to know them, and you realize, like, oh, just because they're in this major or taking this class doesn't necessarily mean this is the choir. But that is something I've struggled with 100% of the way, because as soon as you realize, like, oh, everyone in this club thinks exactly the same way I do, and all we're doing is like setting up conferences where we talk to each other, like, these aren't the people I need to convince. So
it's an echo chamber.
Yeah. And that keeps coming up, which I'm glad it is starting to come up in everyday conversation. But that's, I think, what I attempt to do with In Defense of Plants, and I hope I'm somewhat succeeding, is the fact that I know for a fact that my subscriber base comes from a wide political background. Not everyone that's into gardening thinks exactly the same way I do about ecology and the environment. So I think the other part of this advocacy is to not only make yourself approachable, but make your tone, the way you approach debate approachable as well. Because if I went up there and just said, you are all destroying the environment and you're destroying it because you're a farmer and you're destroying it because you want to develop this area, I think it's different. And my thing was like, don't yell at them, inspire them. And I think that is kind of what I'm attempting with this. And I know that's what's awesome about the Field Guides podcast, is because you're doing the same thing and you're putting out way more hooks in terms of like the topic breadth, the subject base that you guys are going with it. So yeah, what about the tone of this debate? Because educating needs to go beyond the echo chamber.
Okay, so before we start talking about that, should we talk about the Field Guides podcast?
Because
we
Yeah. Let's introduce that as an idea here.
Yeah, so about a year ago, a mutual friend of yours and mine, Steve, came to me wanting to do a podcast. So for the past year, roughly once a month, we've been putting out ecology-based, natural history-based episodes focused on a single natural history topic usually. And we try to delve into the research and kind of reveal that topic. I think our podcast is not quite as meaty as yours, scholarly speaking.
Well, that's because I have actual scholars coming on. Exactly. So I'm cheating completely.
We just have two goofballs out in the woods, right?
Perfect personality combination, might I say.
Thank you. But, you know, with that podcast, I would say that at least now, because we're still relatively small, wouldn't you agree, we're still talking to the echo chamber?
I mean, I think both of us are to a great degree.
Like you said, your audience, you're pretty comfortable that they're coming from a diverse background.
Right.
But Steve and I, over the summertime, we did release one episode on veganism and its environmental impacts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a little uncomfortable. We were wary going into it because we weren't sure what the reaction would be. But we tried to present it in an interesting, non-threatening way, just presenting our personal stories, but then also presenting research, showing why reducing meat consumption reduces environmental impact, generally speaking.
Right. You're putting up a lot of dots for people to look at. And what I liked about that episode, because a lot of vegan stuff can get preachy, a lot of environmental stuff can get preachy, but you said, here's information, do with it what you want.
Right.
You know, and I think that at least gives people that are willing to be rational a framework to work in. You're not sure. saying this is how you need to be. This is not the most ethical thing you have to do. It was just, here's data. We're going to summarize it in a very digestible way. And at no point did you guys get preachy.
And say, this is what you should be doing or else you're horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And that goes into what I was going to say next. You know, I mentioned the Nick Cooney book. Mm-hmm. There's another book, and the title may turn people off, but it's called The Animal Activist's Handbook. It's by Matt Ball and Bruce Friedrich. And I read that book a long time ago, but the greatest thing I found in that book was it talks about using your energy efficiently for a cause and stepping back and saying, is what I'm doing truly serving my cause in the most efficient way possible? So they even talk about how they don't tell everybody they want them to go vegan. Now, they're approaching veganism from a ethical point of view, but they're saying their main goal is to reduce animal suffering. So if they get people to reduce meat consumption, they're going to achieve their goal better than by going out and just telling everybody you shouldn't be eating meat at all, because they're going to have a broader impact and reduce more suffering. And I feel with the vegan episode we did, we approached it from the environmental angle. I said in that podcast, I don't expect everybody to stop eating meat. Realistically, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I live in Buffalo, for God's sake, the chicken wing capital of the world, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
it's not going to happen. So, but my goal is to reduce environmental impact. So that's why I bring that up in my environmental studies class, because it's a forum where I can be reaching out to college students, making them aware of their impact. And even if they reduce meat consumption, they're going to be reducing impact.
Right.
So I don't expect them to completely cut it out.
No.
And I said in the podcast that I thought some vegans were going to be upset when I said, not everyone has to be vegan. I don't expect that. Let's just reduce.
And so, did you find that?
Find what?
That did any vegans get upset with you?
Not as far as I know, but I do got to say I think it's our least popular episode.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well.
So thank you for listening to it.
Well, yeah, and again, I can vouch that it's not a preachy episode. It's worth listening to no matter how you feel, because you're not going to – if you walk out angry, I don't think you should be on the internet. If that's how, that's where your sensitivity bar is set for those sorts of things. But
food is a very touchy issue.
Yeah, and rightly so. I mean, that's what we do to survive, albeit to a weird degree now that we're modern humans, but – the other thing I really love about your podcast, and like, again, I'm cheating because I'm getting people on that are actually doing the research to tell me about the research, but you guys are doing it scientifically. You do incorporate the folklore. You do talk about, you know, what anecdotal evidence and what people have said in the past. And I like that, but you're also saying, well, here's what the research supports. So I think another aspect of activism is to,
Do your homework,
right? And know what's good information and what's not good information, because a lot of this issues that we're facing as society is just, again, comes back to this ignoring facts. And I realize facts aren't and data aren't the things you want to beat people over the head with ad absurdum, but we need them. I mean, there's no like opinions on facts. There's facts, right?
Right. And I think that especially in the environmental field, when people are trying to back up their position on an issue that they care about, they will take any soundbite that sounds good without necessarily researching, are all of these factually true? I've been guilty of it in the past. You know, hearing a soundbite that I think, ooh, that sounds good, that's compelling, and presenting it, and then finding out later, that's not exactly true. I was active in trying to ban fracking in New York State, and there was a lot of information floating around before fracking was banned in New York State. A lot of it was accurate, but even in the environmental community, there was some inaccurate information floating around. So do your homework.
Yeah, because when you have opposers or people opposing your point of view, and the people, again, that are always going to be there that you're never going to be able to convince, those are the first things they're going to grab onto to try to delegitimize or undermine your efforts.
Right.
is if you're going in and saying, well, this causes autism, or this is erroneous, or, you know, like, whatever you get, like, if it's not
it
true.
It weakens all your other arguments.
Everything else you say kind of sounds like, well, I don't know if I can trust them.
Right.
So where do you guys go to do your homework? I guess that's another good point in doing this is, you know, some really convenient jumping off points to get fired up and to get the right kind of information under your belt.
Sure. I guess I would just say use respectable sources, use reputable sources, and make sure you have multiple sources for whatever you're looking up. I mean, there's a lot of shady information out there on the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't use just Wikipedia. So, and I try to talk to experts whenever I can. You know, what do you ask their opinions on different sound bites, different points of view? So don't just take what you're reading on Facebook at face value.
Right. Yeah. Like,
so I know I didn't give any specific sites there, but, you know, just make sure you're using reputable sources and that there's multiple sources for the information that you have.
Yeah, and it's tough too because there is just so much information on the internet and there's a lot of paywalls in front of true research, which really
that
sucks. And I'm hoping at least I'm seeing from academia, the up and coming generation is fighting actively against that. You have ResearchGate where professors are just giving out their research and a lot of open source data mining networks. But not every blog is going to be, you know, their head might be in the right place, but the information you're getting, I mean, mine included, like, I obviously do have an agenda when I'm writing.
Sure.
I try to keep it as scientific as possible, but when I say something's a travesty, there's no way to, like,
say that's objective.
Objectively. Yeah, like, there's no measure of, like, this is a level 3 travesty, sir. So, you know, be able to realize that there is, everyone's got a goal, right? And also, if it's a funded research program or a funded organization, who's giving them that money? That's another thing.
Yeah. Think critically.
Yeah.
And I say always question where the source is coming from, where the funding's coming from, because a lot of those juicy sound bites can have money behind them that definitely has an agenda.
Well, like a friend just sent me a paper on wolverines, and it was talking about persistent snowpack and wolverine breeding territories.
Yeah.
And the paper essentially said, you know, they're not as reliant on snowpack as we once thought. And then you scroll down to the bottom, right by where the literature cited where no one's looking, and you realize Shell Oil funded that study. And I'm not saying they had erroneous data. I'm not saying they did their analyses wrong, but that to me is a bit of a red flag. And I'm going to be a little bit, you know, and I'm at least lucky enough and privileged enough that I have the statistical background and the research background to then dive into, okay, they didn't do a time series analysis or, you know, but again, not everyone, nor should everyone have that level of knowledge to be able to disseminate or, discriminate between good and bad science.
But I think what they can also do is, using that as an example, is there other research going on that backs up those findings?
Right.
Yeah. One paper does not a fact make, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's very true. And, you know, especially one paper, then all the person that's citing is their previous work on the subject, too. You also have to be, that happens a lot.
That should set off a red flag.
Yeah.
So I think the last thing we should talk about is you talked about burnout. I think this is a good time to bring it around to that. So kind of we can come full circle because I talked about how people should educate, debate, advocate. We didn't talk about and advocate, you know, besides joining organizations, you know, go to rallies, sign petitions, do all that stuff. I think that stuff is good. But you talk about celebrate, whether it's a drum circle or whatever. If you're going to be part of a community of activists, you don't want to burn out. You want to channel your energies as efficiently as possible. But you also want to celebrate and be part of a community that's not just all about worrying about problems.
Mm-hmm.
Being part of a community is also, you know, I don't want to keep going back to drum circles.
It's okay. It's a good example.
Having a nature festival, going on nature hikes, doing happy hours, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that there needs to be a mix of that And Ed Abbey, who we mentioned before, he even has a great piece about that, is don't make fighting for the environment a 24-hour-a-day job.
Right. Half-hearted enthusiasts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got to remember why you love the environment in the first place and get out there and enjoy it and listen to the In Defense of Plants podcast.
And the Field Guides.
And the Field Guides podcast. Yeah. And do stuff like that. So don't just make it all about the stressful part of activism.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think that's important too, because and it's super prevalent in the grad school community for a lot of reasons that we don't need to go in here into detail, but it is easy to fall into a pit of despair and then have that like sad sack mentality where like, it's like, wah, wah, we're never going to win. It's just, it's like being hopeless is giving up. If right. you don't, like, I'm a super negative person, or at least pessimistic, as some people would put it. I'd like to think I'm real, but I still have hope. I have hope. And whether that's a hope where we're living a wonderful life into the future, or a hope that at some point something's going to make it through, I don't think giving up and not having hope is a good way to
no, approach. Because, I mean, you really have two options, is to give up and just be angry and wallow in that anger, or you got to do something about it. And I'll tell you, I am prone, just like you, to be a pessimist. And, you know, I've been teaching for a lot of years, but there's some times where I ask myself, is this having an impact? Is this really worthwhile? It just, you get so bogged down, and especially with the results of this election, look at what's coming down the pike and who we might be picking to head the EPA and who he might be picking to head the Department of the Interior. You just want to throw up your hands and say, what can I do against that? But you can't give in to that.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, for someone like me who is a pessimist and who just kind of naturally drifts in that direction, any new thing that I do is helpful. It helps me move me out of that funk, whether it's, you know, attending a rally or signing a petition or leading kids on a nature hike or leading grownups on a nature hike. Everything, it sounds a little bit touchy-feely, but everything you do, it's going to steer you away from that funk.
Yeah.
There's a great quote from an activist out there that says, don't do nothing because you can't do everything.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because getting overwhelmed in this field is easy to do, especially with an issue like global climate change. Like, what right. the hell can one person do about that? Well, not one person, but
you being, need a community.
Even a little bit in your community. And that's where I really like this. Think globally, but act locally. I know for a fact that no matter where you are, within 100 miles of you is an organization doing something really good for the environment that desperately yep. needs your help, whether it's manpower, your time, or your money, or just you advocating for them, they need it desperately.
Yep.
And that's the one thing, yeah, I take away from every person I talk to is we need money, we need funding, we need volunteers. So that, I think, is one of the most effective ways to help your community. And yes, you as a person aren't going to do much for global climate change, but you can do a lot for your community, and a lot of communities doing something adds up pretty quickly.
It does. So you got to find pleasure and find satisfaction in being a cog in the giant wheel.
Yeah.
That is hopefully going to be fighting back.
Right.
Against what's coming.
And I think on the flip side of that argument too is, you know, as an individual, people can get involved in organizations, but as people listening that are in charge of the way organizations are run, like an Audubon chapter or something, diversify. Do something more than just your average school tours. You want to attract as many people as possible. Don't necessarily always go for the hokey nature thing. Right. Find novel ways to engage your community, especially bring young people on, because young people are going to be a little bit more in touch with like the next up and coming stuff. I think more geared to like, you know, people in their 20s, people in their 30s, 40, you know, like diversify, because you want to, it's not just, again, preaching to the choir. You don't want the same five people showing up. You want those five people to introduce five more people.
Right. And that's why, you know, kind of taking it back to where we started, that's why when I was doing environmental education, I decided I wanted to diversify, become a classroom teacher, because, you know, I would talk to people and I would question, you know, how much impact I'm having. And I remember someone said to me, well, hey, if you just change one child's mind, it will have been worth it. And I said, no, if I spend 10 years and I only change one person's mind, obviously I was doing the wrong thing. So I was going to say, people need to always be questioning, you know, how can I make my activism more efficient? Is there an avenue I could be taking where I can be reaching more people? And I think, because we can all get in a rut, actively speaking, you know, just signing petitions online, it's good stuff, but is there more you can do? So just always be thinking about looking for new ways to be more effective. I think that's important too.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, maybe other people will disagree, but I don't agree with the line that, hey, if you just change one mind, it's worth it. That to me says, yeah, that's not very efficient. You should be, you obviously need something different.
7.5 billion people on this planet. We need to do a little bit more than just one mind, but it's a good place to start. And I think, you know, again, what you've done with your life and your career and the way you approach it is really refreshing. And it's great to have such a good friend like you that thinks the same way, but is also willing to push some boundaries.
Right. But I think I appreciate you because you challenge me sometimes and I try to challenge you, like, to clarify my thinking. Because when you asked on Facebook the other day, all right, well, what do we do with this anger? It really forced me to say, all right, what should I tell him? You know, what would I say someone or tell to someone who's asking that? And it really forced me to clarify my thinking a little more.
Good.
So, yeah, I would say don't just, you know, challenge other people and strangers. Challenge your friends and your family, too.
Yeah, and challenge yourself, really. I mean, listen to people you don't agree with, because those, again, are the people you probably most want to try and have some level of convincing with. And yeah, it's good to have your ideals challenged occasionally.
Yeah, I would say even more than occasionally, you know.
Yeah,
You should always be evaluating your viewpoints and your beliefs.
Yeah, and that's sometimes why I get myself in trouble, at least in my friend group, for saying heinous things or just coming out with the most outlandish thing. But it's like, you know what? Good. I'm glad we're all that I just said that, because I obviously don't agree with it, but it's good we all know where we stand.
Yeah.
So, and welcome that kind of thing. I mean, people do react physically to change. That's an inevitability. We are social primates, and you know, at the end of the day, we're going to have some visceral reactions to things, and that's normal. Don't run from that.
Be open to that.
Yeah. Be ready
for
it.
It'll make your life a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Don't get yourself in trouble. Don't get yourself into a bar fight or something like that, but be open to being angry and learning how to talk to people. Again, circling all the way back, without being angry or throwing around insults. That's so important, because that just shuts the conversation down.
Anger usually doesn't change minds.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, again, moving forward, I'm willing to work with whoever is going to work to do good things. I don't care where you're coming from. I'm going to work against anyone doing violent or angry or terrible things, regardless of who you are or where you come from. I don't care.
Well, I don't know. I think sometimes anger, if it's channeled properly, can inspire some people.
Yeah. And again, that comes back to the spectrum, but I'm not going to seek hurtful things.
Yes.
I'm not going to hurt anyone.
No.
You know, that's what I was trying to get at. So
yeah, let's not hurt anybody out there.
Trust me. Yeah. I'm angry. I'm an angry person.
All right.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're busy. You had a long day. You've got a kid who desperately wants your attention, I'm sure, and a wife who also probably wants your attention. But one last plug for the Field Guides and whatever you else have going on. It's a fantastic podcast. I love when the episodes come out. I just wish they came out more often, but you guys are very busy, I understand. So plug away again. Where can people find you?
They can find us on Facebook. That's where, you know, we try to have posts a lot on Facebook. We post our episodes there. They can find us on iTunes. Just type in the Field Guides. And you can go to the fieldguidespodcast.com, where we pretty much have everything. And listen, contact us. Let us know what you're thinking. If people out there have ideas they want us to cover, let us know.
Awesome. Yeah, I highly recommend it. And I have Googled it, and you guys do come up. So it's awesome. Findable. But yeah, expect me over the Christmas period. I'll see you guys, and maybe we'll do a nice crossover podcast.
That'd be awesome.
Excellent, buddy. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, keep fighting.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, there you have it, folks. Just some ideas. And again, there's a million different ways to go about this. There's a million different ways to help support environmental action in your own backyard, but I think it really does have to happen at the community level. I hope we emphasize that. And, you know, learn how to talk to people. Talk to people that you wouldn't normally talk to. Talk to people that you don't necessarily agree with. If we don't challenge ourselves, then we just end up screaming into echo chambers and really accomplishing nothing. No sense in trying to convince someone who's already convinced. And challenge yourself, really. I mean, you gotta look deep and constantly ask where your beliefs are held and why you hold them that way. So, all right, everyone. Again, thank you to everyone who's supported us on Patreon thus far. Please subscribe to this podcast and give it a review. Even if you're not enjoying it, let me know what you think. Just be constructive and tactful. I don't want trolls, but either way, thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. And yeah, let's get out there and help the environment. All right, everyone. Be nice to each other. Adios.